Here's something many people don't realize. You don't need an Investec private bank account to save with Investec. Their personal cash investments are available from 100,000 Rand and designed for capital preservation. In markets like these, having a low-risk cash component alongside equities is simply sensible, particularly if you're over 55.
We say we are non-aligned. We say we trade with everybody. We say we take no side in these great power games. We say that we put South Africa first. But in practice, that is not what we see.
Some powerful stuff there from the chairman of Eskom, Mteto Nyati, speaking at the BizNews conference last week. Good morning. Welcome. This is BizNews Daybreak. I'm Alec Hogg, and today is Tuesday, the 17th of March, 2026. In this episode, we're talking about the realities of power, both the electrical kind that keeps our lights on, and the geopolitical kind that shapes our world, from Eskom's surprising turnaround to the shifting sands of US-China relations and South Africa's own diplomatic tightrope walk. The decisions our leaders make have profound consequences. We're going to start with a look at the global stage and get to markets a little later. Well, the ripples of conflict in the Middle East are causing disruptions far beyond the region. US President Donald Trump has postponed his scheduled trip to Beijing, citing the escalating war in Iran. This delay comes at a critical juncture as Trump continues to press allies, including China, for assistance in securing the Strait of Hormuz. Here's the very latest from our partners at Bloomberg.
President Trump says he has requested a delay of his trip to China. He had been scheduled to meet with Chinese President Xi Jinping in Beijing at the end of the month, but he asked to put it off for a month or so because of war in Iran. At the same time, Trump reiterated an appeal for help from other nations, including China, to secure the Strait of Hormuz. Here is Bloomberg's Skylar Woodhouse.
Clearly, the president is trying to use this as sort of a bargaining trip to try and get potentially China to offer some assistance. But historically, China has not really intervened when it comes to war. So it will be interesting to see, one, if China approves the president's request to delay his trip, and if China ultimately decides to offer any assistance.
That is Bloomberg's Skylar Woodhouse. However, allies in both Europe and Asia are hesitant to send ships to help reopen the strait. Here is Bloomberg's Tyler Kendall.
We heard from the German Chancellor Merz saying that the NATO alliance is a defense alliance. It's not an intervention alliance, in his words, appearing to echo what we heard from UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer earlier today, who seemed to rule out the potential that we could see a NATO naval mission sent to the Strait of Hormuz, though people familiar with the matter do tell Bloomberg News the UK is looking at some other potential options to put on the table in talks with the US, including deploying autonomous drone mine-hunting drones to go after any potential mines that may be left in the strait.
That is Bloomberg's Tyler Kendall. Now, several countries have already said they're not getting involved, and that list includes Spain, Italy, Japan, and Australia.
While global diplomacy stalls over oil routes, we're facing a massive infrastructure crisis right here at home, and it's not just about what's in our dams. Celia Brunk was at the BizNews conference last week and gave an impressive delivery in the Neil de Beer Liberty Indaba segment that he had. He then went back home. He is the mayoral candidate for Tshwane for the Democratic Alliance and sat with his partners in the DA podcast, where he laid out the shocking statistics regarding municipal water losses, highlighting a systemic failure in local governance and a severe lack of infrastructure investment over the last two decades. Let's have a listen.
In Johannesburg, 50% of the water that the municipality purchases from Rand Water for onward distribution to consumers leaks out.
Yeah.
It's because of poor maintenance, poor capital replacement. Tshwane is 40%. Mm-hmm. Ekurhuleni is a little bit better. Mm-hmm. But that's the crux of the issue. It's not an act of nature or of an act of God. It is poor maintenance, poor planning, mm-hmm. and it is money not spent 20 years ago. It's an ANC-induced injury.
It is. And when you say 40% leak, what does that mean? Mm-hmm.
water boards like Rand Water and Mahali's Water abstract water from dams, from water sources.
Okay.
They then purify it and send it for onward distribution to municipalities. You've got different water systems. Now, obviously, Rand Water, Mahali's Water, the other water boards have their issues, but then it comes, it gets pumped into the municipal reservoir, somewhere on a hill or a water tower, and from there it goes to your tap.
Okay.
It is in that space, not from the dam to the purification plant, it's from the municipal reservoir to the tap in your house or the water system in your business that leaks or valves that aren't properly maintained, that water is lost. Yes, it's a problem of maintenance. However, it's also a problem. It's not spending capital budget on on infrastructure. And that's actually quite a good predictor of where a municipality is going. What does it spend on putting stuff in the ground, whether it's pipes, whether it's electricity lines? If it's spending most of its money on salaries, contracted services, consumption, things that you spend and then it's gone, instead of spending stuff to put it in the ground that can deliver services, that is predictive of water outages, of the water crisis that we have now.
On to our big story now. That failure in local planning is exactly what our next guest addressed head-on at the BNC 8 conference. Eskom Chairman Mteto Nyati celebrated a significant milestone, the end of load shedding. But he didn't mince his words about the current political landscape. He called out inconsistency in our foreign policy and challenged the government of national unity to move beyond mere stability to actual growth. Interestingly, he also reaffirmed a call that we'd heard earlier from U.S. Ambassador Brent Bozell for non-alignment, true non-alignment by South Africa, opening the door to prosperity for the country rather than our current position where we certainly are playing sides.
I know many people in the governing party think that China is our BFF. But when you look at it, if you look over the last 10 years or 15 years or so, we have lost close to 500,000 manufacturing jobs to China. And that is a problem. China is for China. And we need to be driving an agenda that is for South Africa. And at the core of that agenda, at the very core of that agenda is a strong Eskom that knows what is expected of it. An Eskom that is delivering affordable, cheap electricity to enable all of these industries. So, when you're looking at it now from a geopolitical perspective, geopolitically, our non-aligned stance makes perfect sense. We all hear. We get it. We say we are non-aligned. We say we trade with everybody. We say we take no side in these great power games. We say that we put South Africa first. But in practice, that is not what we see. But in practice, we're seeing selective partnership. And that is where I think we are going wrong as a country. We really do need to move back to our non-aligned stance. And non-alignment only works if we're strong internally. Strong economy, strong institutions, and strong rule of law.
The Eskom chairman's demand for strong, capable leadership is crucial, especially as South Africa's international relationships face increased scrutiny. The arrival of the new U.S. ambassador, Brent Bozell, has certainly stirred the pot. Bozell brings a fascinating and highly influential background to Pretoria. Dr. Franz Cronier from the Common Sense recently unpacked Bozell's pedigree and the implications of his appointment for the future of U.S.-South Africa relations.
New ambassador is a chap called Brent Bozell. He comes from a very interesting background. His father was at Yale with William F. Buckley of National Review fame that was so influential in carrying Reagan to power, and his father, in fact, drafted the immensely influential biography of Barry Goldwater, whose failed campaign against Lyndon Johnson was so instrumental in later in Reagan's sort of ascension to greatness. And this chap sent out his ambassador, and a couple of days ago, our great friend Alec Hogg, who runs the amazing BizNews platform, hosts him at his conference in Hermanus, which is one of the like go-to strategic and political events of the year on the South African calendar. And this chap makes a speech, the new ambassador, and there's outrage in the press. I saw that the Times Media Group described his speech as an attack on the country. I saw that a radio station, 702, demanded that he apologize for such arrogance, and that they in fact suggested he be demarched before he was demarched, which is sort of a smoking gun, but we'll get into that on another day. And if you were a normal member of the public sort of looking, you might think, what a dreadful person, what had he done? But let me quote for you what he said. This is from his remarks. Make up your own mind. South Africa matters to Washington. President Trump values the relationship with South Africa and considers it among the top 10 countries in terms of importance. The United States stands ready to be a partner in that work. We believe the U.S.-South Africa partnership has great untapped potential. South Africa is a nation of immense potential, immense complexity, and immense importance, not only on this continent but around the globe. Though I've only recently arrived, I've begun to experience the richness and complexity of this remarkable country. I've been struck by something equally powerful, the dynamism of this country. It's entrepreneurs, it's innovators, it's young people, it's deep reservoir of talent, ambition, and confidence. When I came here, I was not looking to have a fight. I came to find ways that our countries can come back to the table and proceed. We want partners who also dream great dreams. And that's South Africa's signature. Let's do all in our power to make our relationship prosper and thrive. And he went on and on and on in a similar tenor. And the reaction was barely concealed loathing from the mainstream press and the South African government.
Frans Grenier is the chairman of the board at the Social Research Foundation and one of South Africa's top political scientists. Ambassador Bozell wasted no time getting to work, but his recent activities, including a visit to the Apartheid Museum, have also drawn sharp criticism from some local commentators. You almost feel as though they were looking for an excuse. Didn't say much, as you heard earlier, at the BizNews conference, which could be criticized. However, in this conversation between my colleague Chris Stain and retired Colonel Chris Wyatt, they came to some interesting conclusions. And you have to ask, is the outrage justified or is it a symptom of something else? We heard from Colonel Wyatt in that conversation with Chris, who tackled the backlash head-on, arguing that those attacking the ambassador are missing the point of diplomacy and perhaps revealing their own insecurities.
Boy, BizNews' conference has got the world buzzing. Let's talk about this one.
Absolutely. Do you think that the new U.S. ambassador, Brent Bozell III, that his first public address might be his last?
No, I don't think it'll be his last, but I can tell you that what happened was eminently predictable. What's fascinating to me is I read the story by Victoria Regan in the Daily Maverick talking about the reason Durko demarched him and called him in wasn't simply for his comments at the BizNews conference, but they also said they wanted explanations for why he visited the Apartheid Museum and why he went to Soweto and why he's visiting with South Africans. I'm sorry, did they miss the part about diplomacy? I mean, you're going to demarch an ambassador for visiting the Apartheid Museum? Did you bother to read the comments that came out in the press about what he talked about South Africa's horrible history of apartheid and the need for reconciliation? I mean, he's spewing your talking points for the ANC and for Durko. I don't understand what their problem with that is. If they want to call him on the carpet for what he said at the business conference, okay, I understand that. But frankly, that's ludicrous too. Most of what he said at that conference was very complimentary about South Africa. And he talked about how the United States wants to have better relations with South Africa. But he did tell the truth that people need to know. The United States is frustrated. A year ago, the United States gave 5 asks to South Africa. And those 5 asks, not only have they not been addressed, but one of your members of your government and national unity returned to South Africa after an official visit to the United States. That would be Corné Mulder, leader of the Freedom Front Plus. And not only did the president of the Republic not take those 5 asks, he refused to even meet with him. A member of his government, a party that's in a coalition with him, he refused to meet with him to talk about this. The arrogance is beyond the pale. So this was expected. I'm not at all surprised this happened. And you see a lot of South African commentators going, wow, just 3 weeks into this. I'm surprised it took 3 weeks, to be honest. And I'm also shocked to hear that Durka would call the ambassador on the carpet about going to the apartheid museum. I mean, seriously, if he wants to understand South Africa better, he's never been to South Africa. What better opportunity than to go to Soweto, to the apartheid museum? Now, if he went in on the rides at Gold Reef City next to it, maybe you could complain about that. But he went into the apartheid museum. What kind of nonsense is this? And it goes on from there. The attacks coming from the typical leftist commentators in the Times Live, in News 24, obviously on target, just, you know, as if they were queued up and already written before the event even happened. They just changed the dates and the event and the comments. That's all they had to change.
Lots of interesting insights today, but let's get the latest from global markets, starting with the overnight update from our partners in New York.
Crude oil prices retreated on the bet oil tankers will be able at some point to traverse the Strait of Hormuz. WTI crude down 5.3% in New York trading to 93.50. In the equity market, we had the S&P 500 rising 1%. Here is Lori Goodman, Global Head of Investment and Wealth Solutions at Jefferies.
It's really hard to play geopolitics. It's hard to know what's going on with the leader in Iran, if the leader in Iran is alive at the moment, what the current administration in the U.S. is going to do. And so we're telling investors to stay the course, that in all likelihood, this will hopefully end soon and things will go back to normal. We do anticipate that there will continue to be some elevated geopolitical risk. This has been something that's been growing for some time.
That is Lori Goodman from Jefferies. NVIDIA's AI conference began today, and CEO Jensen Huang said the company is expecting to generate at least $1 trillion from its Blackwell and Rubin chips through the end of 2027. Now, NVIDIA previously forecast $500 billion in sales by the end of 2026. Here is NVIDIA CEO Jensen Huang.
2025 was NVIDIA's year of inference. We wanted to make sure that not only were we good at training and post-training, that we were incredibly good at every single phase of AI, so that the investments that were made, investments made in our infrastructure, could scale out for as long as they would like to use it. And the useful life of NVIDIA's infrastructure would be long, and therefore the cost would be incredibly low.
CEO Jensen Huang speaking at NVIDIA's GTC event. Shares in NVIDIA were up by 1.6%. The Securities and Exchange Commission is reportedly preparing a proposal to eliminate the requirement to report quarterly earnings. The Wall Street Journal says companies would instead be given the option to share results twice a year. Now, once the proposal is published, it will be subject to a public comment period. And after that period, which typically lasts at least 30 days, the SEC will vote on it. There are no guarantees, though, it will ultimately happen. Fed policymakers begin their 2-day meeting on Tuesday, and we have a preview of the decision from Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett.
The meeting comes amid rising oil prices and how that will affect the Fed's inflation outlook. Eric Rosengren is the former president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston.
I would highlight that even before the war, the committee was quite divided. So there was a significant subset of individuals that were very concerned about inflation and a somewhat smaller subset that were worried about the fragility of the labor market.
Federal Reserve policymakers are widely expected to hold interest rates steady while also putting out new forecasts for their outlook for inflation and growth. In New York, Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Radio.
Locally, the rand starts at 16.70 against the US dollar. This after a green session on Wall Street. where even Bitcoin had a good one. It got close to $75,000, $74,500 is where it begins today. The gold price was steady at just over $5,000 an ounce. As far as individual stocks are concerned, well, as you heard earlier, NASDAQ and S&P were up by more than one percentage point each, and that translated into some good gains amongst the tech stocks as well. Meta was up 2.3%, Amazon 2%, Nvidia, as you heard earlier, 1.5%, and Google by 1%. ASML has been making a little bit of a comeback lately, and it picked up after coming under a lot of pressure last week. ASML picked up another 2% and is now at 1375. Berkshire, 0.5%, Teledyne, 1%, and so it goes. Here on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, Purple Group dipped below 2 Rand a share, but there was a good rebound for We Buy Cars, which was up by 3.3%. And after that knock last week, Afrimat is starting to claw its way back. It picked up nearly 3% yesterday. Another big winner amongst our favorite stocks, Sabvest, was up by 3.5%. Sasol continues its upward march, 195 Rand a share after a 1.75% gain on the JSE yesterday. Well, from the literal leaks in our water system to the fragile state of global diplomacy, today's stories all point to one truth: leadership matters. Competence and clear strategy are not negotiable if South Africa is to thrive. Thank you for joining me on BizNews Daybreak. If you found today's insights valuable, please subscribe and share the podcast. See you tomorrow. When it comes to savings, we spend a lot of time discussing returns and interest rates, but not enough time asking why we're saving in the first place. That's the thinking behind Investec's hashtag What's Your Why campaign that's been running. If your goal is stability or peace of mind, their personal cash investment is accessible from 100,000 Rand and you don't need to bank with them. Whatever your reason for saving, Investec understands that.